All right, we have the tremendous good fortune to learn Maseches Brachos together. It'll be a little bit of a briefer shiur today because of our introductory events today and the first day of this month. But part of how this parak specifically is structured, so we're starting with the sixth parak, and more so than with the first parak, actually. So this parak lends itself to an introduction, even more so than other Masechtas, and even more so perhaps than the beginning of the Masechta. So we're able to jump into the Gemara a little bit in a introductory fashion, because the Gemara lends itself to it. Our topic here of Brachas Hanenin, of the whole notion of reciting a bracha as an obligation, and in fact an obligation that applies multiple times a day, is the topic of this parak. Maseches Brachos is broken up roughly into three parts. The first number of prakim talk about Kriyat Shema, and then the middle section talks about Tefillah, daily Tefillah, and from here to the end, the various types of brachos are discussed. So this section starts the last section of Maseches Brachos, and on this daf, it takes up the topic of the nature of the obligation. So we need to try to understand a couple of fundamentals. So what questions do you think we want to clarify? So if you were a reporter trying to understand this notion of a bracha, what questions would you prioritize to try to look into? Eric?
Why do different things need different brachos?
Okay, it's an interesting question, right? So first, let's start off acknowledging that there are different kinds of brachos, different categories, right? So we know that there are brachos recited on mitzvos. There are brachos recited on natural phenomena, which will come up later in the Masechta. And there are brachos recited on, for lack of a better word, pleasures. We say brachos hanenin, mostly foods, but other types of pleasures as well. So, but for our purposes now, we'll call them food brachos. Brachos hanenin is the more proper term. So this parak starts off talking about brachos hanenin. And within that, so there are many different types of brachos hanenin, or at least a few different types of brachos hanenin. So why do we need that? Right, so that's already a detailed question, but it's an important detailed question. Okay, but even beyond that, or before that, there are some more fundamental questions. That's certainly an important question, but there are probably even more fundamental questions we could ask. Your own?
Why do we make brachos?
Why do we make brachos? Now, that, let's break down. What do you mean by why? Why means a couple. Why is one of those words that has a couple
what's
different
the
meanings?
Of that?
Okay, what's the
what
purpose?
Does it accomplish?
What does it accomplish? Okay. What else? What else could why mean? Yeah?
What's the source?
What's the source? Okay, now that also could break down into a couple of things. What do you mean when you say, what's the source?
Is it biblical?
Okay, so what kind of source does it have? Yeah. And then it'll be, if it's biblical, if it's in the Torah, so where does it come from? Right, okay. What else? Any other questions, Avi?
Which part is the bracha on? Like, is it
interesting?
Pre, for whatever you're about to do, or is it on the action, or is it
okay, so are there different targets, different aspects that the bracha could be referring to? Interesting. Okay, any other fundamental questions that come to mind? All right, so let's already organize what we just heard. Right? So we know that, yeah?
Why these words for the bracha?
Okay, so why specific texts?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so let's try to organize now what we just heard. So what questions came to mind? So first, in terms of the level of the questions that were just thrown out, so, okay, want to put another one? Caleb?
Why so flowery?
Okay. So that relates a little bit to Moshe's question about the words.
Yeah, Moshe, when you think about it.
Okay. So let's present it like this. Right? So in order of kind of a progression here, so first of all, where do brachos come from? Is this coming from the Torah itself? And if so, where? And then what level of authority does it have? What are we looking to accomplish with brachos? As Yaron asked. Once we have that, so why are brachos the way they are? Which we had a number of questions that spoke to that. Why aren't they just one thing? Why do they subdivide the way they do? And why do they draw upon a certain, maybe poetic nature? And Moshe, I don't know if this was your question, but we'll also discover that there are certain fundamentals in terms of the structure of a bracha. So what role do they play? Zavi?
Just on a basic knowledge level, what to make, like which bracha goes to what and how to differentiate between specific things when it comes to that.
Right, so the Mishnah, takes brachos as a given and starts right away telling us that. Right. So that's the Mishnah's task. Right. So the Mishnah assumes you know that such a thing is a bracha, right, and starts telling you what brachos to make.
Right.
Right. Which is a little bit similar to when you see the beginning of the Masechta. So the first Mishnah, the Masechta, starts telling you what the Zmanim for Kriya Shema. And then the Gemara says, well, hold on, Tanim Hechikai, whoever said that such a thing is Kriya Shema, whoever said that such a thing as an obligation to say Kriya Shema. So the Gemara takes up the task of trying to figure out how do you know there's an obligation to say Kriya Shema twice a day. So here you have somewhat of a similar structure that the Mishnah starts telling you what brachos to make on what. And the Gemara says, well, hold on. Why do I have to make a bracha on anything? Where does this whole concept of a bracha come from? So we take a step back. So the first, the Mishnah is telling you what brachos to make, the detail you want to know, which certainly is going to be important to us. But before expanding on that, so the Gemara, very helpful to us, says, well, let's take a step back here. Who says a bracha is a thing? And let's try to figure out where that comes from. So let's follow up on that. So where do brachos indeed come from? So what answer emerges from the Gemara? Right? So you got to see the Gemara a little bit. So what would you say? So what impression do you have? Is it brachos min haTorah or brachos mitrabanan? Yes, Caleb.
Depends on the bracha.
Does it? Okay, yes. So expand a little bit.
Well, for instance, I'm not sure, I don't remember if it appeared here or in a sugya earlier on in Brachot, but the source for Birkat HaMazon is the Achalta V'Savata V'Rachta.
Okay, so let's put that out there, that for sure, Birkat HaMazon, according to everybody, is Daraisa. But that's really a different category. Now, it's not irrelevant. It may be the model for us, but that's actually not the topic of this parak. Right? So that's a different thing. Right? That's actually the topic of the next parak. So the idea here of the brachos that we make before eating, so that may have a strong kesher to the brachos of Muslim, but the idea of a bracha rishona, so where does that come from? So brachos of Muslim, you're right, so that we read in the parsha a few weeks ago, so that's a din min haTorah. But the din of a bracha rishona, where does that come from? So, okay, we want to finish one? Yeah?
Well, so the Gemara says that there, it's a kal v'chomer.
Okay,
that
so
just,
what?
That just as we make a bracha after we eat, then so too, all the more so, shouldn't we make a bracha before we eat? But Tosfot rejects the kal
okay,
v'chomer.
So one possibility...
it's a derabanan.
Right, so one possibility is that it is derived from benching, right? And the Tosfot's statement is important. We'll come back to that as a conclusion. So hold on to that, Tosfot. It's very important. Yeah,
something a little more simpler is just talking about the Gemara mentions that you just need to thank Hashem for things that He gives you. So therefore, it's just basically like a challah, right? I think that's the terminology it uses. So like you're just thanking Hashem that you had fruits and vegetables today, or whatever else it is. It's like that basic. That's why you have them.
Okay, so you're referring to the citation of the pasuk of Kodesh Shilulim.
Yeah.
Okay, so whether that means that you have to thank Hashem, right. We're not sure yet if that's what it means, but that's one possible interpretation of it, but that right. Might be a source. So does that mean it's min haTorah, or does that mean...
Seemingly, probably not.
Oh, seemingly, probably not.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have to figure that out. So there's a pasuk invoked, but we're not sure what to do with it. Right. Okay, Eric?
I think Rashi kind of phrases it in terms of like a pidyon, which is interesting now that I think about it, which maybe that lends itself more to like almost like a practical device when it comes to like just like getting along and stuff like that. Like we have to like, maybe mom has to ask Hashem before taking it. Like even Rav Akiva says it's usher to take it before asking for permission with his bracha. So maybe we're actually contextualizing it as in terms of like stealing if we don't do it.
Okay, which is the language the Gemara itself uses a little bit further down, right? Or sounds like it.
I don't know. I don't have time to get
this far
out today, but...
Okay, so the Gemara uses language like that. We have to figure out what to do with that. Okay, so we find on this daf some conflicting impressions. That there are some psukim which are brought into the conversation. Not really clear what to do with them. Caleb's point is very well taken, that Tosis... It's not the only view in Rishonim, but a prominent one, and convincing in pointing out that it doesn't seem lahalacha that we treat brachos as daraisa. Whatever impressions you may get from sources and discussions on this daf, you have to somehow deal with them. Because practically speaking, it doesn't sound like we treat brachos as daraisa. That's basically Tosus's point. And Tosus proves that from other Gemaras. That other Gemaras seem to show us that when we distinguish practically between daraisas and drabanans for halachic rulings, we generally put brachos in the drabanan bucket. So doesn't that show you that brachos are treated as drabanans? And therefore, we have to assume that that's the conclusion of the Gemara. So even though there are different statements that are bandied about back and forth on this daf, is that perhaps the conclusion? So maybe so, but there is a lot of effort that is put forward trying to figure this out, because you do get somewhat of a mixed impression. And what's going to play a major role in the whole conversation, and we'll have to discuss this in a parallel way while trying to figure this out, is the svara that the Gemara invokes on the bottom of this page, that the Gemara tells us that there is a logical principle that's being invoked here. And towards the bottom of the daf, the Gemara says, essentially, which sounds like it's the bottom line here, literally and conceptually, before the two dots, right? Ela svaruhu, osula li adam shi'ahanem no olam hazeh b'lo bracha. That you have a logical principle that it's clear, it's prohibited for a person to benefit from this world without a bracha. And then, after the two dots, the Gemara picks up again, Tana Rabbanan, Asulo li'adim shi'hanam and olam hazeh b'lo bracha, v'chol hananim and olam hazeh b'lo bracha, ma'al. That is considered to be an act of mi'ila, which means benefiting inappropriately from hektish. And that Gemara continues on to the next daf, with a stronger language of Amar of Chanina Bar Papa, Kol Hananem and Olam Hazeh V'lo Bracha, Kilu Gozel HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Knesset Yisrael. And I have a few points of comparison here, which we'll go into in more detail as we go on. So, this idea, if this is the conclusion, that it's a Svara, so what do you do with that? So, yeah?
Sounds like it's
Doraita. Oh, yeah? How do you know it sounds like it's Doraita?
Well, Svaras are usually...
How do you know that?
Well, isn't a Svara... Doesn't that make something Doraita?
How do you know? Because it's a Svara?
Because it's a Svara, I guess.
Can you think of a Gemara that sounds like that? Gemara you may have seen today, by any chance? Oh, interesting. It all comes together now. So there's a Gemara in Bava Kamma and elsewhere as well. But there's a Gemara in Bava Kamma that gives you that impression. It's pretty convenient that someone asked you to look at that. So the Gemara in Bava Kamma is one of a number of places that gives you the impression that a Svara is as powerful as a Dimana Torah. Because there, if you got a chance to see that in the Makaros, so the Gemara is talking about the principle of Hamotzi Mechaver Olo Haraya, one of the most important rules in Dine Mamanus, that the one who's trying to claim money from someone else has to prove his position, and otherwise the other party gets to keep his money. So the Gemara asks, what's the source? And first the Gemara gives a pasuk. And then after that, the Gemara says, well, what do I need a pasuk for? Lama likra svaruhu. Why do I need a pasuk? It's logically compelling. So the impression you get is that the pasuk, if you don't need the pasuk because the svara, so then what does that tell you?
Svaras are strong, or just as much of the source as the rest
is. Yeah, because otherwise the answer would have been, well, I'm very happy that it's a svara, but I need a pasuk in order to give it the weight of a din min haTorah. So apparently, if you have a svara, so then that equates to a din min haTorah. So that prompts a number of achronim, such as the Pnei Yehoshua, perhaps most prominently, to have a difficult time with this Gemara. Because this Gemara tells us that it's a svara, that one can't benefit from this world without a bracha. So Tosus is probably correct, or Tosus seems to be correct, in displaying that the halacha treats Berachos Hananin as rabbinic law. So how does that coexist with the idea that it's a svara? And elsewhere we see that svara carries the weight of Torah law. So the Pnei Yeshua has a difficult time with it. He doesn't really give a conclusive answer. Do you want to try at that? You want to take a stab at that? How could you maybe reconcile? One way to suggest is, first of all, it's tricky to say that svara, what, think about it for a second, right? To say that a svara creates a din in a Torah is always going to be a challenging concept, because what qualifies as a svara, right? Svara, this is actually, if you're following the news right now, right? So what's going on in Israel right now? What is lighting Israel on metaphorical fire right now?
Supreme Court,
right? What, judicial reform? But what is the topic of the past month in Hebrew?
Reasonableness.
How do you say that in Hebrew?
Svirut.
It's the same word, right? The point is that the concept of svirut is highly subjective, right? So one man's svara is another man's not svara, right? So if you're going to say that a svara is something that creates a din min haTorah, so not all svaras are equal. So it's possible that what's a svara in one place may not be the same svara somewhere else. So you could say that, yeah, it says it's svara here, and there it says it's a svara, but they're not the same kind of svara. So you could possibly...
How do you deem something to be a svara?
It's very challenging. But that's, again, that's why they're fighting over there so much, because the whole notion of allowing anyone's svara power to be so determinative is problematic. So here, it's not so satisfying, but you could say that in Bava Kamma, the svara was to Chazal so powerful that they felt there's no further need for any other pasuk. While here, you could say that the svara is something, but not enough that it rises to the level of a din min haTorah.
It seems to be that the svara still needs something, because we said before that we derive our brachos coming from a doraisa.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if the svara is real, whatever you want to say real is, there still is we're still using a d'oraisa to derive our svara. So there's still that little backing to it. So therefore,
you mean d'oraisa being the psukim that are quoted?
Yeah.
So that's also.
Does that really make it? A, does that make it a svara? Because it's not really logic at that point. It's just using sources.
So that's an interesting question also, right? So it's an important point. And also, the psukim, which are not necessarily all from Chumash, right?
Yeah.
It's like the idea of L'Hashem Eretz Umlo, which is from Tehillim, right? So that is contributing to the svara. It's an important point. Right? So it also shows that not every svara is equal. So let me come back to that, but it's an important point. So one other approach, which some of the Achronim have, which is probably also relevant here, which may also be a part of the answer, is that the svara is playing a different role in, let's say, Hamotzi Mechavero, all of Haraya, than it would be playing here. That there, it's not creating a mitzvah. In the case of Hamotzi Mechavero Haraya, you have two parties. Somebody's got to win. Right? You have the guy claiming and the guy who is the mochza. So, who wins in this conflict? One of them, right? It's got to be one of them. Or it's split. Or you have three choices, right? It's going to be one or the other, or you'll split it. So, the Gemara is saying that it makes sense that the person who is holding on to it in the absence of proof should be able to hold on to it. In fact, by the way, if you want to know just how powerful that svara is, so if you look on Wikipedia, so the concept of possession is 9/10 of the law, which is a universally believed idea, is said all the time, I believe, if I remember correctly, without any clear source, because it's the kind of svara that the whole world agrees with. So that's a super svara, right? That's a svara that is considered to be very, very widely held. So, the Gemara is basically saying that you have to choose between the claimant and the mochzok, the toin and the mochzok. So, it makes sense that leave it with the mochzok. So, you're not making a mitzvah there. You have to pick one or the other. So, the svara is to leave it with the mochzok. So, by Torah law, it makes sense that that's where it stays, and that affects all dinim and ha-Torah. I'll take a question in a second. But here, you want to use your svara to make a new mitzvah and say that that'll be one of the 613 mitzvahs because it makes sense to you. So that's too much heavy lifting for a svara to do. So to say that you can use a svara to create a new mitzvah, we don't have a source for that. We don't have anywhere in Shas, maybe, that says that a svara is like a din min haTorah to create a new mitzvah. The Gemara in Bava Kamma, which says that I don't need a pasuk when I have a svara, it means I don't need to point to any extra words in the Torah to tell me that if I try to take money from you without proof, that that's not going to work. Because that's the kind of thing that I would need a source to tell me the other way. So it makes sense that by Torah law that I get to keep my stuff unless you have a way to prove it otherwise. That's just so logical. I don't need a pasuk to say otherwise. I'm not creating a new mitzvah out of it. But here, you want to create a new din of a bracha. You want to create a new obligation. So that I need a pasuk for. So it may be a good idea. It may strike you as very logical. But to say that that creates a din min haTorah, that we don't have any such concept. Hi.
Two questions.
Yeah.
I'll go backwards. First, doesn't that really... The whole thing we just said about svara, doesn't that really support Darabanan? Because they can't really create a new mitzvah, but their logic is enough that there should be something in place.
So it's important. Let me expand on that, actually, because that's very much to the point. So, and that's probably actually, because of our short time, probably as far as we'll get, and then we'll have to go into this more tomorrow. But it's a very important point. It's very much to the point. So... there is a major machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban as far as how rabbinic law works. And the Rambam maintains that rabbinic authority to make new dinim comes from the pasuk we read a few weeks ago in Parshas Shoftim of Lo Sasim and Adavar Sheyagidu L'Chayam and Asmal, that when you have a halachic question, you have to go to the authority of that time to interpret the din. and you can't deviate from what he says. So the Rambam writes that that means not only what we would call in America judiciary authority, that the halachic authority can interpret what the Torah says, but also legislative authority, that he can also make new rules. So the fact that we have to follow the new dinim drabanan comes from that pasuk. And the Ramban disagrees. And the Ramban says that, no, it's not the source for legislative authority, it's only the source for judiciary authority. So in America, we have division of power. This is also part of the whole Israeli fight, the separation of powers. Right? So we have separation of powers. They're two separate things, the judiciary and the legislature. So the pasuk is only talking about one. It's only talking about judiciary authority. It's talking about interpreting the existing Torah. It's not talking about legislative authority to make new rules. And the Rambam sees it as including legislative authority also. So a part of the problem, the Ramban says, against the Rambam, is how could you tell me, Maimonides, that rabbinic authority is included in that pasuk? We treat rabbinic authority, we treat rabbinic laws differently. We say safek derabanan lakula. So according to you, Rambam, all rabbinic law comes from the pasuk in the Torah. How can we make any distinction? So there's a lot of literature trying to answer that question. But then the question flips back on the Ramban. So, okay, fine. It doesn't come from there. But then where does it come from? Why should we follow rabbinic law? So that has to be answered. And according to the premise of the question, you can't just give a different pasuk because you'll have the same question. So it can't be that pasuk or it can't be any other pasuk. So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, who dealt with this at length in his Sefer Kuntres Divrei Sofrim, so he writes, it can't be any other pasuk, because they'll have the same problem. But it also can't be a svara, because we see from the Gemara in Bava Kamma that a svara is just as strong as a pasuk. So if it's any other pasuk, we'll have the same problem. And if it's a svara, we'll have the same problem. So it can't be any other pasuk, and it can't be a svara either. Now, according to what we just said, maybe not. Maybe no, a svara has the power of a deraisa to settle an issue, but it doesn't have the power of a deraisa to create a new mitzvah. So if the svara is there, it still wouldn't be a din deraisa, it wouldn't be a mitzvah min ha-Torah. So maybe it could be a svara. Maybe the dinim derabanan could be svaras, and maybe that could be where the Ramban is coming from. And in fact, maybe all the more so, maybe it's actually pretty good that way. That maybe that's in fact where rabbinic authority comes from. Now there's much, much more to say about this, but just in a very, very brief way, to allow us to fulfill the mitzvah of the Rabbanan of Davening Mincha. But maybe in fact that's actually the secret, right? That the rabbis figured out all of these svaras, the rabbis understood where it makes sense to make new legislation because of their highly intuitive understanding of what already is a part of the Torah, and where they logically saw room for more dinim, that's when they legislated. So specifically where there is a svara, so that's when they formalized it with dinim. So the new dinim drabanan are particularly in response to where there's a svara to do something. So that creates a very appropriate framework for what's going on here. So then it would work out well when the Gemara is saying that there's a svara to make a bracha. So then Chazal responded by formalizing rabbinic brachos. Now, what we'll see tomorrow is that there are nuanced differences among Rishonim in how to understand what's going on here. And they're not saying the exact same thing, but they will fit in within this framework. That there's some message that the Torah is conveying, and Chazal are responding to that message somehow with the brachos, and the Rishonim may occupy different points along that spectrum, but that's essentially the consensus of what's going on, that the Torah is transmitting to us a message of how we should be responding to God's gift to us in this world, the various gifts to us, And Chazal told us that we should respond to that through the format of the brachos that they commanded us to do. And what exactly is included in that response, so hopefully tomorrow we'll be able to see a lot more about what that requires. But like I said, they also asked us to daven three times a day, so we'll proceed with that. Let's go. Yeah.
So now that we have that framework, and the covenant disproves or proves what a sfar is.
Yeah.
But the